Joining us now is Eric Peters, excellent site, ericpetersautos.com or epautos.com. All kinds of information about Liberty and mobility, as the car companies like to call it now, but actually he does car reviews, real car reviews and practical car reviews. It's not, oh, look at this hypercar that is going to cost you $4 million or something, and maybe they'll make it, maybe they won't. No, it's real stuff. And he's got news today, because it looks like things have broken our way on several different fronts, doesn't it, Eric? Tell us about it.
It does, yeah. The wheels seem to be coming off of the EV bandwagon. multiple things to talk about. One is
maybe we can get some regenerative. Maybe we can get some regenerative braking on this as well.
Yeah, well, maybe we get some money back in our pockets too.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, the Ford is having difficulty moving the Lightning, which is the electric version of the F-150 pickup. Sales are down almost 50%. They've had to idle the line that builds them. Dealers are not ordering more of them because they can't sell the ones that they've got. GM has had to scale back its expectations. That's the verbiage that they used. But the really big news, and this is huge, is that it has leaked that Dodge, which had said that it was going to end the current Charger and Challenger as we knew them, with gas-powered engines and V8 engines and all the good stuff that makes them desirable,
yeah,
and turn them into battery-powered devices like all the other battery-powered devices, has apparently seen that the people who buy vehicles like that don't want battery-powered devices. It's like trying to sell a blue-collar guy Bud Light with Dylan Mulvaney on the can. It's just not going to work. So it turns out that they're going to offer that thing with the new Hurricane inline six-cylinder engine. They'll continue to build the battery version of it, but that's going to be a compliance car. The one that people want is going to be the one with the gas-burning inline six-cylinder engine.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, and I remember when they rolled the thing out, how they had speakers and the soundtrack to make it sound like it was
terrible.
The other car. It was such a joke, and we laughed about that.
Poor Steve Kaniskis, you know, he's the guy in charge over there, and I felt so bad for him, you know, having to go through that awful pantomime and pretend that, you know, he was putting lipstick on the proverbial pig. But the bottom line is, you know, they decided to, for once, do something proactive rather than reactive, you know, like mm-hmm. Ford did. Ford made this massive commitment to these battery-powered devices that's turning out to potentially be something that could ultimately kill Ford. And now they're having to try to figure out how to undo the damage that's been done. And I think that Stellantis, which is the parent company of Dodge, looked at that and said, you know, we better not go down that road.
Mm-hmm.
So they have apparently decided that they're going to put the gas engines in the new generation Charger that's going to be coming out a few months from now. And that's big news because, again, it shows that this whole EV thing is starting to fall apart. It's not just Dodge, but Dodge, this business with Dodge is highly revelatory, in my opinion.
Well, you know, it's also, GM has said, because of the United Auto Workers strikes and everything, the United Auto Workers have thrown this thing down and said, look, if we go to EVs, we're going to be out of business. And so are all these people who are supplying parts. There's not going to be any oil filters, any of this other kind of stuff.
Yep.
And so you've got a lot of the workers who have now have now taken a position on this. You got and so GM has said, we're going to completely rethink our EV strategy. So you've got Chrysler, or just Stellantis owns them. They've said, well, we're going to continue to sell the Charger muscle cars that we're going to shut down. Then you got GM says we're going to completely rethink our strategy. Then you got the Ford CEO who just took that comical trip to see what it was like, you know, in a try to take a cross country trip, and this thing goes, well, this stuff really isn't ready. Now he is saying that EVs have become a political football. And so, you got the big three in America, even though Stellantis isn't owned by American anymore. But, you know, these big three car companies here are pushing against it. And a whole bunch of different car companies are pushing back against the EPA's move to try to completely ban cars that have internal combustion engines. They said, that's too much. You're going too far, too fast. And so a lot of them are pushing back on that, aren't they?
They are. Well, the mass hysteria is wearing off. You know, there's an analog here with the pandemic. You know, mm-hmm. It took a while for people to understand what was going on with the masks and certainly with the vaccines. There was kind of a lag time. This was sort of like bum rushed on the public. And the same has been done with electrification. Nothing but rosy stories about how wonderful they were, how superior they were to these clunky, old, filthy, dirty, gas-burning cars that we have. And, you know, for a while, this created a kind of kinetic energy behind this push to electrify things. But over the course of the past year, just like with the vaccines, people figured out that they weren't being told the truth. The truth has become begun to leach out about electric vehicles. And when you combine the truth with the fact that now, you know, interest rates on loans are much higher than they used to be, and the idea that the average person is somehow going to be able to afford an entry-level $50,000 EV or a $70,000 or $80,000 loaded EV is ludicrous. It's just not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the insurance industry, because things that you and I have talked about for a long time, the fact that if there's minor fender bender, how do we know that the battery pack has not been compromised somewhere? And if one part of the battery pack, one cell, has been compromised, this thing could go into spontaneous combustion, kill the people, do a complete totaling the car. And so now you've got a lot of insurance companies that are either raising the rates by like 75% or canceling insurance contracts on EVs altogether, so you can't get any insurance on it.
It doesn't even take an impact. I was reading a news article out of Scotland. I hadn't had a chance to confirm this, but I'm assuming it's accurate. A man had a Tesla, and he parked it outside in a downpour, and it got rained on.
Oh, yeah.
And then it wouldn't work. Did you know the story?
Yeah. I talked about it, like something like $21,000 bill or something to replace the batteries.
Because it has a vent. So, you know, the vehicle was rained on and water got into the vent, into the battery. And, of course, that creates a major problem. And the fix when the battery is damaged is to replace it. So, you know, now the guy's looking at a $20,000 replacement, which, I mean, it's nobody can do that. And, you know, this is not a unique circumstance. This is an inherent vulnerability to these vehicles. So think about hurricanes, think about weather, and think about what the insurance mafia is going to do when it realizes its risk exposure to these losses.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Jason Barker comments here. He says the old inline six was a great motor that Ford made. I had a 93 F-150, and all I ever had to do to it was to keep the oil change. Yeah, you know, that's the
completely
thing.
Completely true.
What's that?
Completely true. A buddy of mine, my high school roommate, who's, you know, he lives just a couple of miles down the road from me. Back in 1989, after he got out of college, he bought a brand new F-150 for his then, you know, beginning business as a roofing contractor. His son is driving that truck today.
Yeah. My first car was a 1968 Fastback Mustang, and I didn't even change the oil. That was my first car. I didn't know anything. And, you know, I'm just driving it. Never had any problem with it. I mean, it had a bulletproof engine. That thing was amazing, considering all the stuff that I did to it as a new driver. I mean, I drove the thing like it was a Duke's Hazard, you know, and I never had any problem with it. And then my next car, Eric, was a Triumph Spitfire. And I found out all about maintenance.
Yes.
And babying this thing.
To get serious on this, you know, we hear these fatuities from these green people about sustainability. I'll tell you what's sustainable is a vehicle that lasts for 20 years, you know, that doesn't require you to get a new one every 7 or 8 with all the attendant earth rape that's involved in extracting the raw materials, manufacturing it, and so on, which is what you have with these electric vehicles.
That's right. Yeah, if you go back and think about it, you know, the cars that we were buying in the 70s and stuff, you know, people were changing cars every 3 years, but they had more purchasing power, the cars were cheaper, and all the rest of this stuff. You know, if you go back and you look at, as you pointed out many, many times, all these government-mandated add-ons and everything, not only did they raise the price, but they reduce the reliability. Can you imagine how much cheaper? They've done a great job in terms of increasing reliability. And, you know, with the competition from Japan and everything, all the cars are now really reliable. Yep. Can you imagine how long they would last and how much cheaper they would be without government interference pushing stuff on there that is expensive and breaks?
Yeah, that's one of the tragedies of our time. You know, I've talked before about how tragic it is to the kids today, you know, just out of high school, early 20s, they're getting their first job. They've been priced effectively out of the car market. Yeah. Because of all of this. And there is no reason whatsoever from a technological point of view, manufacturing point of view, at all, that we couldn't have brand new basic entry-level cars that got 50 miles per gallon that cost about $11,000. And I can, you know, say that with certainty because those vehicles exist and are available for sale in other countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about how entry-level people in France, you know, teenagers or whatever, they could buy a super cheap, cheaply made and a very slow car, but it was didn't have a lot of add-ons to it, safety equipment, all that kind of stuff. If they wanted to get that, they were allowed to get it as young drivers just to get them into the cars. Of course, we don't have any exemptions like that for any reason whatsoever.
Well, there is a reason. What they're trying to do is to alienate the rising generation from vehicles and from driving, and it's been very effective. You know, the stat that I quote is that something on the order of a fourth of the people in the 16 to 24 cohort don't even have a driver's license because they don't want to drive, and they don't want to drive because cars are forbidding for them. They're a debt albatross. They're beyond their means. If they can't afford the car, they can't afford the insurance, and so they don't want to drive. And that's exactly what's wanted, and that's exactly the purpose and point of everything that these people, as Robert E. Lee referred to them, are doing.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, a large part of that is also what's being pushed to them, right? At the same time, they're bringing resistance for people to get out in the real world and do real things. They're making it very easy for you to stay home and just have online friends and online school. And, you know, it's kind of like everything that we saw with the lockdown, but they're doing that to the younger group a lot more. And it was big training to lock everybody down for a year to do that kind of stuff. That made a big impression on a lot of people, especially the youngest people. And so they just want to stay there and, you know, hey, I'll just have electronic relationships with people and I won't get out and do the real stuff.
Yeah, virtual relationships, virtual reality, nothing tangible, nothing real.
That's right.
You know, everything fake, fraudulent, and ultimately controlled by something that's out of their control.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, and when we talk about the fact that people don't want to own a car, this whole robo-taxi thing, and that's something that's moved our way as well. The people in California hate these things, had a big traffic jam in Austin because, you know, Austin wants to be California. They want Elon Musk to come there. They want to, streamline everything for self-driving cars and trucks and all that kind of stuff in Texas. And so, big traffic jams in Austin. But this has been happening so much in California. People got very upset about it. They were putting cones on the cars, which would basically freak them out, and they would just stop in their place and not damage the car, but just, you know, make it stop and not move. And so now the California Department of Motor Vehicles has now pulled Cruise's license. That's the GM subsidiary for autonomous vehicle deployment. They've now pulled their license for operating on public roads. That's a good move as well.
No question. Absolutely. Yeah. Anything that helps to dial this back. You know, they're leveraging the government to push this. You know, with these autonomous cars and the electric cars, they are using fleet purchases to try to push them into the so-called mainstream and to just kind of get people acclimated to becoming passive passengers of transportation as a service rather than people who own cars and control them and drive them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's from the very beginning. That has been the purpose, is to pacify people, to take away private cars and to turn this over to some of their stakeholder partners who are then going to control your mobility. They'll rent you everything because everything's going to be about renting. They'll rent you everything, and then they'll only let you go places if the government is happy with what you're doing. And that's been the design from the very beginning of it. It also has to do with all the 15-minute cities and all the rest of this stuff, right? They want to make sure that you don't even need to rent a taxi because you'll be prohibited from leaving your area. You'll have maybe CBDC that only works in your little location, and you can't even walk outside that area and use your money. They'll have it geolocated. It is a complete a prison system that they're trying to design for people. And that's why you and I have opposed from the beginning all of this stuff, the autonomous vehicles and the way that Tesla, the way Elon Musk, put that as the cherry on top of the EV cars that he was selling in order to make it futuristic and all the rest of the stuff. That's a key part of that always. But of course, the electric vehicle with its limited capability of getting different places. You got an article about the plug. Talk to people about that. You know, people who haven't owned a electric vehicle don't realize how non-standard these plugs are, right?
Yeah, that's one of the inconvenient truths about EVs that people should be aware of. And I'll preface it by saying this. In the first place, to make an electric car practical to charge at home, you're going to need to have what they call a level 2 240-volt dedicated circuit that's accessible to the cord for the EV. Most houses don't have that, so you're probably going to have to hire an electrician to come out there and wire that up for you, and your panel may not be capable of supporting it. That's point one. Point two, If you have more than one vehicle, I mean, if you have a single-family house, more than likely there's more than one vehicle. So this idea that we're going to replace the existing fleet of non-electric vehicles with EVs becomes problematic because most houses cannot support multiple 240-volt level 2 chargers, which means that only one car can charge in a reasonable amount of time, and the other one becomes a part-time vehicle, which makes no sense, and nobody's going to spend $50,000 on a vehicle that you can only use 2 or 3 days out of the week, if that. Mm-hmm. But wait, there's more. As you just said, you know, the plugs are not standardized. So if you pay the electrician to rig up the outlet for your Tesla, let's say, that might not work for another brand of EV. Mm-hmm. So now you're stuck having to get the electrician to come out again and make another change or modification if you want to drive a different make of electric car than the one that you had when you first paid him to come out and install the outlet. Isn't it wonderful?
And of course, one of the commenters here, Narrowway Narrowgate Ministry, says car garages are starting to collapse due to the weight of the EVs not being calculated and accounted for in the weight bearing built into the floors. And also saying in the UK, we're going to have to redesign the parking lots, not only for the weight, but we're going to have to redesign them so the cars are farther apart. So if they spontaneously combust, they don't all burn up. I mean, it's just one thing after the other. They're just going to say, sorry, you can't have any cars, because that's really what they're after. They want to ban all private vehicles. And they're saying that out loud. You and I have known this for a long time. You could read it and what they were doing and what their goals were. You know, you would say, hey, we know how they're going to get there and what they're going to do. Now they're just saying it out loud.
Sure. And again, there's an analog here with these vaccines, which they knew at the same time they were having their mouthpieces like Biden tell people that if you took this shot, you won't get the Rona, you can't spread the Rona. They knew that was false. And they allowed that lie to be propagated for whatever ulterior purpose, we don't know. Same thing here. They're just trying to shuck and jive and mislead people for some kind of sneaky agenda that we haven't fully fleshed out yet, but we can be pretty certain has something to do with winnowing transportation for people to be able to drive their own private cars when and where they want to.
Yeah. Every time you look at this, whatever it is that they're completely focused on, it's always one facet of a prison cell that they're building for us, right? All these things come together when you understand this is all about making us imprisoned into their agenda. One of the listeners, Chevkin321, says, once auto workers and blue-collar people come to the realization that Trump, Republicans, and Democrats, and Biden, all of them, want their total destruction, then maybe things can change in America. And that's what we hope. You know, people got to wake up to this agenda. They are so gaslit by their tribalism. Oh, it's not our guy. It's the other guy. No, it's both of these guys that's doing it, right?
Well, both parties. That, and it's also kind of abstract, I think, in that, you know, a lot of these regulatory regimes that have consequences for the market and for liberty are abstract for a lot of people, and they're not immediately obvious what the effect is. And it's really quite clever. You know, the government doesn't say, we're going to prohibit the manufacture of gas-powered vehicles. What they do is set forth a requirement that every vehicle manufacturer must comply with a minimum mandatory fuel economy figure of, say, 50 miles per gallon. And that has the effect of outlawing pretty much every car that isn't an electric car. But the people generally don't see that. They don't understand that. Mm-hmm. And they think, oh, well, this is just a natural evolution of the car market.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about going back to the past. Let's go back to the past because, you know, Back to the Future. They just found a 1981 DeLorean found in a barn, only has 977 miles on it, and I'm sure that it never went faster than 85 miles per hour. Maybe it did. Maybe that's how the thing got there, you know? But, I mean, it's all dusty, and it's like it's straight out of the movie. Did you ever see a DeLorean, Eric, or even drive one?
Oh, yes. I've seen several, and if you want to see one locally, well, if you're ever in my neck, there is a place called the Duncan Car Museum that's in Christiansburg, which is about half hour's drive away from me, and they have one there. They're really neat to look at. Yeah, you know, DeLorean was a brilliant designer. Mm-hmm. It wasn't fleshed out that great. It had a Renault V6 that wasn't particularly reliable, and it was about as fast as a Chevette, even though it looked super speedy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, it's just the tragedy of it is that people like DeLorean, who was he was one of the icons with good reason in the car business, were able to design cars like that as an independent. And even though he wasn't able to be successful, he almost was, and he might have been. That's almost impossible today because of the regulatory capture, the difficulty of anybody getting into the business because it's so ossified now by the regulatory regime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And highly bureaucratic, too. I mean, you had people like Lee Iacocca comes up with a Mustang. Mustang or whatever, and he rides that to fame and fortune. Same thing with DeLorean. You know, it's also when you look, I had an opportunity to, we came to Pigeon Forge once about a decade or so ago, and they had a DeLorean convention, and we didn't know anything about it. We just showed up, and it's like there's DeLoreans all over, never seen one in my life, and in person. And they were everywhere. It was amazing. Yeah. And I got to see inside of them. And it really was thinking outside of the box. I mean, very, very different. All of it was very, very different. Yeah, there was, when you look at it, I've seen some of them, people, they needed to be lowered a little bit. They rode really high, and they, you know, almost like a pickup truck or something. It needed to be lowered. I always hated the square headlights that were there. But of course, why did they have square headlights, Eric? It goes back to government regulations, right? Tell us a little bit about that. You know, the headlights that they're requiring had government mandated headlights that were allowed.
Oh, yeah, and you have to go back even farther than that. You know, the government got its dirty fingers involved in that in the 70s. And if you are familiar with you know, people who would try to import to this country a vehicle that was legal to sell in Europe, but its side markers or its headlights weren't quite in line with whatever the specification was for the DOT in this country, they had to pay to have the car modified. And there were also bumper requirements. You had to have an ugly bumper grafted onto your beautiful Italian sports car in order for it to be legal to bring into this country.
And the round headlights. I remember we got a foreign car, and in Europe, it looked really nice because it had these glass headlights, like you see all the time now, that were halogen or something. But when they brought it into the U.S., they had to put in two of those round headlights that were the only ones approved by the government, and then put them in a plastic surround thing. It looked awful, you know, and it's like, what? And plus, they weren't as good. They weren't nearly as good as the European things, but they dictated every headlight that was out there at that time.
Yeah, and the fundamental question is, how did this come about? I mean, how is it that we live ostensibly in a constitutional republic where the authority of the federal government is, per the document, supposed to be strictly limited? How did we arrive at a point where the government is micromanaging what a car company can do in terms of styling and designing a vehicle, or telling you how many miles per gallon the car that you buy is allowed to use?
That's right. Well, I just take a look at the, okay, so part of the joke with a DeLorean that a lot of people won't realize if they're younger, was the thing, if you go 85 miles an hour, 86 miles, what was it? 88 miles per hour, right? Yeah. And because the speedometer only goes to 85. So you're burying the speedometer, right? And that was something that was imposed by the government along with a 55 mile an hour speed limit to save fuel. You will not have any speedometer that goes above 85 because we don't want to get people to drive fast and that type of thing. And so that was a joke talking about that government mandated speedometer. So they mandate the headlights, they mandate the speedometer, silly stuff like that, but it's no sillier than this whole climate change nonsense and emissions. I mean, that was a key part of it. And when we talk about how did they do that, right? How did they impose the 55 mile an hour speed limit? How did they impose this 85 mile an hour speedometer? Well, the 85 mile an hour speedometer, they just, I don't know, they, you know, I guess.
They just decreed it.
Yeah, they just decree it. The 55 mile an hour speed limit, which was just decreed by Richard Nixon, was done on the basis of withholding money, though. That's the thing. You know, they tell the car companies, we don't want you to have a speedometer that goes more than 85. And so they don't want to fight with the people that can make their lives miserable or put them out of business. So I guess they just do it. With a speed limit, it's like, well, we're not going to give you any federal money if you don't do it. And that's why I was trying to get everybody to understand the people who hated me at InfoWars, the listeners at InfoWars who hated me because I opposed Trump. They said, Trump doesn't have anything to do with this stuff. I said, no, he does. He's financing it. You know, it's the same thing that Richard Nixon did with a 55 mile an hour speed limit. He's giving people massive amounts of money to run these death protocols in the hospitals and all the rest of this stuff. And that's why they're doing it, because he's giving them money. The reason the governors are making this an emergency thing is because he's showering billions of dollars on all, or tens of billions of dollars on these different governors to do all this stuff, both Republican and Democrat. It's always the money.
Yeah, and adding insult to injury, the majority of that money is it's sourced from the very states themselves.
Yes.
You know, the states pay the money, the federal government gets the money, and then the federal government says, well, we'll give you some of it back, provided you're obedient and do what we tell you with regard to something like the 55 mile an hour speed limit, which, by the way, wasn't silly. It generated how knows how many hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue for state and local governments via trumped up speeding tickets, and also for the insurance mafia, which could use those tickets as the pretext for labeling you a risky and unsafe driver.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're partners in crime. You know, everybody makes something out of it. And that's what they did with the pandemic. You know, if you understand the way the government works, it's like they don't want to just directly decree this, because then they're going to have some challenges from some people according to the 10th Amendment. And so what they do is they make, you know, recommendations. And so now you got Fauci saying, I didn't lock anybody down, I just made recommendations. And Trump said, I didn't lock anybody down, I just made recommendations and wrote them checks to do it, right? That's the way this stuff always
it's
works.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
You have to give these people credit. I mean, it really is a sly, cunning, and effective way to game and manipulate people's attention.
Yeah, that's right. Superfay says, I've got a 1980 VW Rabbit. I had a 1978 VW Rabbit. It's still kicking. How is it that they knew how to get 50 miles per gallon out of a little four-cylinder diesel back in the 1970s? Is that not green? Yeah, that's exactly right. It really is. And, you know, get this thing to last. And the diesels, of all things, and we talked about this, how they hammered VW over the quote-unquote cheating, where nobody died, nobody was hurt, nobody was defrauded, and, you know, hit them with like $4 billion and came after executives with criminal charges, and they immediately ran away from this very fuel-efficient diesel that they had and start becoming big champions of electric vehicles. They got the message, didn't they?
Well, yeah, and the government absolutely had to do that because of the existential threat that low-cost, high-mileage, endlessly durable diesels posed to this electrification agenda. I mean, how ridiculous would a Tesla look that costs $50,000 that goes 270 miles when for $22,000 you could buy a Jetta that gets 50-something miles per gallon and goes 700 miles?
Yeah, exactly right. I've got a comment here from Trump Burger Forever. He said, we need to have some automakers fail before things are going to change. No more bailouts. But you know, that's another part of the DeLorean story as well, right? Yeah, you know, he got desperate. He had everybody aligned against him, and, you know, they kind of set him up. But we also saw that with Tucker, a great movie that was done by Francis Ford Coppola about that. You know, you try to come up with something that is, you know, buck the system. And today, of course, if you want to come up with a new car, the only option that you would have would be to come up with some kind of a three-wheel vehicle, because everything else is going to be so highly regulated, you'll never be able to compete with these corporations. And the corporations have really, you know, had the government as their ally. So, of course, they're going to do what the government wants with this EV stuff for the most part, because the government essentially sawed off the ladders of their competitors before they could get up to a level where they could compete with them. With all of these regulations, the big car companies love all of these safety and emission regulations because it makes the car very complicated and difficult.
Sure. And yes, and once again, you know, it's another facet of this push toward creating an elitist system where people who are very wealthy can get around it. You know, you mentioned the three-wheeler. Well, you can get around these regs having to do with safety and emissions if you're a low-volume specialty manufacturer. For example, I can't remember the name of the company, but they are remanufacturing exact replicas of early mid-60s Ford Mustangs. I mean, you can buy a brand new Ford Mustang, except it's going to cost you about $250,000.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a super face. Her diesel she ran on went forever, ran it on waste vegetable oil for years.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought about doing that at one point in time. We had a diesel. The issue was if you're going to start taking this vegetable oil from a restaurant, they want you to take all of their stuff, you know. Then they got wise to it and they said, hey, we can start charging people for this stuff. And so, you know, we wind up not doing that. But that's the key thing, because that's the next thing they're going to take from us, and that's going to be the fuel.
They're going to try. And the advantage to the diesel engines, the older ones, the mechanically injected ones that will burn practically any oil, is that is indeed very green and very sustainable. You know, local people can make oil out of crops pretty readily that will burn in a diesel engine. So, you know, that would be a very, very clever way to get around some of the stuff that they're pushing on people. It reminds me of, I read an article the other day, it was great, about how one restaurant got around some of the lockdown restrictions during the Rona by declaring itself a private members-only club and therefore exempt from the public health measures that apply to open to the public. So you walked in there and you signed your name on a piece of paper and you gave them your $1 membership fee and you could function like a normal human being again.
You know, that's been done a lot of times. We used to be in the video business. We didn't get into it until after there'd been a Supreme Court case that said, no, after you sold these video cassettes to people, you can't tell them they can't rent them. But prior to that, there were all these legal restrictions and everything. That's why you had the membership charges at these different places, because, you know, now we got a private club. You see that with raw milk, you know, and things like that. Oh, or with beef. Although, even though you can become a member with a farm to get grass-fed beef and all the rest of this stuff, the USDA will still come in and, you know, with jackbooted thugs and shut down your farm, as we saw with an Amish guy recently, if you try to slaughter the animals that you've raised cleanly and organically, and you don't want to send it to the government feedlots and the, you know, the centralized meatpacking companies, if you try to do it yourself, they'll come in and shut you down and take away your entire farm, which they did to an Amish farmer.
Yeah,
in one of these states close by, South Carolina or Virginia. I can't remember which one it was, but yeah.
Yeah, and this sort of thing, you know, as appalling as it is, the truth of it is getting out. And the deeper and more important truth, which is that the motivations behind this are not well meant. You know, the lie that they were able to propagate before that, oh, we're only doing this to make sure that people don't get poisoned or get adulterated food, or we're saving the climate, or we're preventing granny from dying, people understand that these are shabby window dressings that are being used by tyrannical people to try to diminish our lives and to usurp us. The word has gotten out about this, and I think that's why the wheels are coming off the EV bandwagon.
Yeah, I agree. Christine, 1235 says, I wish I would have valued my old cars, always traded them in. When almost paid off, I was so stupid. Yeah, you know, it's just like this car, this DeLorean. You know, that is a different kind of car. But you stop and think about all the different cars and how Obama went through in the Cash for Clunkers program. Let's get rid of these old internal combustion engine cars that we can keep fixing and running forever. Let's get rid of all those, and we'll give you a little bit of cash for that, because we want everybody to get all new stuff that we can control electronically. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've taken a lot for granted, all of us, I think, you know, if we examine ourselves. And, you know, the time has come to stop taking things for granted, cars being one of them. You know, it's time to take a cold shower and realize that we've been living in a false reality for a long time. And it's best that we just come to terms with that and get back to a productive, sound, healthy reality.
Yeah, they want to take us back to a pre-industrial revolution serfdom, I think, is where they want to take us back.
Sure.
You know, going to be kind of some weird combination of that, along with, you know, you live in a tiny 300-square-foot garage apartment and you spend all your time on virtual reality. They want to take us back to some mix between those two things, you know, use that to try to pacify us. But we need to, before that happens, we need to start to simplify our lives a little bit. You know, as you point out, learning how to do some of these things ourselves and learn some self-sufficiency, start to get outside of this control grid. You know, I was talking earlier about CBDC, and because we had this whole thing about Emmer, who was trying to, you know, the House whip who had put himself up for a Speaker of the House and got the nomination, but then Trump came out against him. I said, well, the only thing I knew about him was CBDC, and I thought that was pretty good. Found out that he was completely owned by big tech and was trying to, he was opposing CBDC because he was for cryptocurrency, and he tried to stop the SEC from coming after Sam Bankman-Fried and so forth. And so there's some issues like that. You know, when you look at CBDC, that is something that is really looming over the horizon for us. So one person commented before you came on and said, well, mark my word, when they push it on us, they'll call it Trump coin. Well, it was Trump and Jared Kushner who were pushing CBDC when Trump was president, and Biden is pushing it everywhere. I mean, that's a key issue, isn't it?
Oh, sure. I mean, right after nuclear war, that is probably the greatest existential threat that we face, because if they can digitize the currency, they own us.
Yes.
You know, they can, at a whim, at the stroke of a keyboard, they can restrict or turn off our ability to transact business, to buy, to sell. They can determine what we're allowed to buy and how much. You know, I mean, to the nth finest degree. People think, you know, that they feel a little anxious and worried about the way things are going. Imagine if they knew that if they were to voice any kind of a contrary opinion whatsoever, they might find out that their bank account has been locked up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's teachers in the UK, who probably don't disagree that they'd be left of the government probably in most cases, but they found out they're being recorded and information's been kept on them and files are being kept on them and all the rest of this is Stasi Germany stuff. I remember years ago there was a woman who was she was a communist, she was an American. And she went to East Germany because she just loved communism. And so she went there just to enjoy the thrill of austerity and totalitarianism, I guess. But she married a guy that was there. And they were very suspicious of her because it's like the people who lived under it was like, nobody could come here because nobody could be that stupid to voluntarily come here and live under the system. So they're keeping tabs on her. They figured she was an American spy. And she said she was very disturbed to find years later that when people started going back and started exposing what the Stasi were doing, she started looking at it. So she said she found out all of her neighbors were keeping tabs on her and spying on her. But they don't need people to do that anymore. They got computers to do it. They got software that's going to do it. All the software that we use is going to spy on us and inform on the government and put everything into a Stasi file on each and every one of us. And the CBDC will be the weapon that they use to attack us with that.
Yeah, there's a strange disconnect that people can imagine somehow that an authoritarian system can be benevolent.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't understand how you can hold that thought in your mind. But that's the nature of it. You know, I put something on Twitter/X the other day that almost nobody likes a bully, right? I mean, most people just, you know, they don't like bullies, and yet they'll vote for them.
Yeah.
And yet they'll endorse bullying when it's done by somebody else.
But he's
and
our
that
bully.
Seems to me to be the fundamental problem we've got.
Yeah, he's our bully.
Hmm?
He's our bully, and he owns the libs.
Our bully. Exactly. Yeah, it's okay if we bully people who, you know, who don't share our point of view and who want to live their lives in a way that's different than ours. But then we get upset when those same people acquire political power and use it to bully us.
That's right. Yeah, you know, it's gotten, I think part of that, Trump owns the libs, and I love it when he does that. Part of that is just the frustration of what's going on with social media and how social media has really kind of activated that hatred of one side versus the other. It's a constant debate, a constant fight over stuff like that. And so let's just get somebody who's going to be a bully and a thug, and he's going to just come in and knock the other side down, which is what the left wants, and it's now really what the right wants as well. And you see this reflected as people say, well, let's just forget about all these elections. Let's just have a fight. Let's just.
It's like, isn't that wonderful? I mean, it's like we're reliving pre-war Germany, where the Nazis were fighting against the communists, and they were essentially the same thing, but you had to pick one or the other.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I think we ought to have Trump and Biden be our champions. I think they ought to go to the ring and fight it out. Except they've already been doing this professional wrestling, you know.
It'd be funny if the consequences weren't so serious.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the problem that we've got, this idea that it's legitimate somehow to go after other people. And, the social media thing, I don't know whether you follow Jordan Peterson. I like a lot of what he's got to say. And he was saying in one of his monologues that the social media thing wherein people can heckle each other anonymously under the cover of a fictitious identity has empowered narcissistic, psychopathic personalities and just ramped up this meanness and anger that is creating this social friction and fueling people like Trump, unfortunately.
Oh, I agree. And yet, I've also seen Jordan Peterson call for, we need to end anonymity on the internet. And I don't agree with that either. That's a very dangerous thing. And so, you look at these problems and doesn't mean that we've necessarily got a good solution for it. And certainly every problem can't be solved by government. If government is going to end anonymity, they're going to do it with a bullying tactic is what's going to happen with it. So, and you see that everywhere. You look at, there's always this justification of why they've got to get an ID for us. And of course, that's where the ending of anonymity goes. If you say, well, we got to end anonymity on the internet, that means everybody's got to have an ID so we know who everybody is. And we've seen that used to say we're going to stop child pornography. I'm not in favor of child pornography. I think you ought to arrest the child pornographers, but don't make me have an ID to get on the internet. And they say, well, we're going to have deep fakes from our artificial intelligence. Well, regulate your artificial intelligence. Don't regulate me. you know, or, right. or what DeSantis did. He said, well, we got all these people coming across the border, and so we're going to need to know if you're an American citizen, so you're going to have to get e-verified. It's like, make them get an ID, you know, put an ID on the artificial intelligence and on the illegal immigrants, but not on Americans. But they always use it to identify their own citizens.
Yeah, they create a problem, and then they have the pretext for their solution, which is always less liberty for us and more presumptive guilt for us. You know, we haven't done anything, but we might do something, and therefore we must be treated as if we actually did do something. But to get back to your earlier point, I think we do have a way of dealing with these problems. It's an ancient one, and it's the golden rule. You know, it's embodied in basic Christian theology. It's about do unto others as they would do as you would have them do unto you.
That's right.
Leave people alone. Stop bothering other people unless they're bothering you in some tangible way.
That's right. And yet they can't apply that golden rule even to free speech, right? Because they're more than happy to have their speech clipped if they can clip the speech of somebody else that they don't like. And again, I'm seeing that on the right as well. You know, when we look at these highly emotionally charged issues, especially when we look at Israel versus Hamas, we're seeing calls for censorship, you know, from both the left and the right in terms of taking this stuff out. Everybody is just, again, I think it's part of the fourth turning. You know, Strauss and Howe talked about, and everybody is just itching for a fight, you know, and they don't want to go through any of the things that are tried and true that keep a civilized society civilized. They just want to fight. It's amazing to watch it happen.
Well, it's understandable, though. You know, people are exasperated, and I get that. And I think the reason that they're exasperated is because there's no way out. There's no safety valve. Imagine being caught in an abusive marriage with somebody that you had nothing in common with, who was making your life miserable, but you couldn't get away from them. Mm-hmm. You couldn't divorce. You couldn't move on, go to another town, and have your life back. How would you feel? That, I think, is really, in a nutshell, what characterizes how people feel today and why they feel that way.
Oh, I agree. Super Faye had a comment. We were talking before about the Cash for Clunkers. She said, Cash for Clunkers was the worst thing for hobbyists. They destroyed every part of those clunkers, quote unquote, so they could not even be recycled or reused. It was such a scam. It was the exact opposite of green. She's exactly right.
Yeah. It also took the first time car, the car that you would buy when you were a kid, when you're 16, you get your driver's license, your first car, something cheap. You know, you're not supposed to drive a new car when you're 16 years old. You drive a beater, you get your first car. Mm-hmm. It took those cars entirely out of circulation, and that helped to, sour the rising generation on vehicle ownership.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. One person here, Obsolete Man 1776, said dealerships love the easy money. We had so many use that to get a ride that they couldn't afford. Then they get stuck with an 18% interest rate and all the rest of the stuff. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's something despicable about destroying perfectly usable equipment. I know I used to watch until I couldn't take it anymore. The destruction where they would pour silica, you know, into the engines of a perfectly well-running vehicle. You know, it was old, had high miles, so there's nothing wrong with it. It could have provided useful service for somebody. And they put the silica in it, and they drain the oil, and they let the engine run until it locks up.
Wow.
Because that was part of the requirements of Cash for Clunkers, that the thing be rendered unusable, to destroy it. And it's disgusting. Can you imagine a society that rewards, not only rewards, but the government promotes the destruction, the throwing away of valuable, productive things?
But that was kind of just a foretaste of what was about to come. Because we see the government doing that with everything now, right? Look at what they're doing in the UK. They said, well, we don't want you to have natural gas heaters or ranges or any of this other kind of stuff. So we're going to ban those, and you're going to get electric stuff that we can control on the centrally controlled grid. And not only that, but we're going to come along and we're going to rip up the gas lines out of the ground. And so it's this destruction. You know, when we talk about, you know, pouring garbage into the engine until it seizes up as a requirement, that's what they're doing to everything in society. They're making the engines of society seize up everywhere, and it's just nothing but a path of destruction. And it's constant. You know, it's every week there's something else that I report on that's coming from the Biden administration and from the EPA or from the Department of Energy or from the Department of Transportation. Every week it is something that they're coming out with to destroy that works. And you're not going to have this anymore. We're just going to destroy it arbitrarily and wantonly right now, and we're going to force you to buy something that's more expensive. Mm-hmm. One of the examples of it, of course, are the power plants. You know, you see all these power plants that are working fine, paid for. We're going to destroy those so we can do massive solar farms and wind farms and then put these gigantic battery things out in the middle of the woods or middle of your neighborhood that are going to catch fire. They're going to be much worse than any car fire we've ever seen.
Yeah, and it's not limited to the destruction of purely physical things.
Yeah.
These same people are doing their very best to wreck the minds of kids, for example, by pushing this disordered thinking about you can be whatever you think you are, and then you are, and other people are obliged to say and affirm that indeed you are. So if you say you're a furry and you need a litter box, that's supposed to be affirmed, and it's hugely destructive, you know, to the minds of children.
Yes,
and that's just one of many examples. You know, they've corrupted the medical system, the health system. They have destroyed trust that people used to have for good reason, and now they have good reason to not trust it.
That's right.
It's appalling, and it's everywhere.
Yeah, they've come after us, body, mind, and soul, haven't they? I mean, just look at the fear of these kids. You know, there is no future. We're all going to die from global warming and climate change and all the rest. I'm not going to have any kids and all the rest of this stuff. I mean, it truly is amazing. And then they come after their bodies with the gender stuff. They really come after every aspect of society. It is really totalitarian in its aspect because it hits us in every aspect of our life. There's not a one that
leaves. It's a death cult.
Yeah.
But of course, it's our death that they want. You know, they themselves think that they're going to be insulated from it at the apex of the pyramid, and that they're just going to rule over this disordered landscape of psychologically disturbed people who are enserfed and have accepted their enserfment and their diminished life that they've been bequeathed by the Klaus Schwab types of the world.
Yeah, one comment on here, Denver Attaway says, China needed the steel, so Obama gave China the steel from the cash for clunkers. I didn't know about that, but I would not be surprised because he was doing the same thing with brass, spent brass at Fort Drum in New York. You know, it's like, well, we're not going to put this in the and sell this into the market so people can reuse this. We're going to crush it and sell it for scrap metal at a much, much lower price to China. So they did that with the brass, you know, to keep people from being able to have ammunition. I'm sure they would do that with steel for the cars to keep people from having more cars.
Well, how about power? You know, they have packed up and shipped to China utility plants, you know, that didn't meet current EPA regulations here, because apparently it's okay for the climate to have those those plants in operation in China.
Yeah, that is amazing. Yeah, they, under this Paris Climate Accord, they can build as many power plants as they want. They can be as dirty as they want. No limits on that whatsoever. And a lot of the people who believed all this stuff, very angry about that. They said this is nothing more than just a transfer of manufacturing capacity to China and to India. And of course, you know, literally, I didn't know they were literally packing up plants and shipping them over. But, you know, for all practical purposes, that's what they're doing. They're allowed to build refineries, you know, for oil. Yep. We're not allowed to build refineries, any more refineries. We got to shut them down. It is truly, you know, like you said, that image of pouring stuff into the engine and running it till it seizes up, that is exactly, that describes the Biden administration to a T. Everything they do is really about that.
And, you know, the sick part about it, or the sickest part about it, is these people know that they're insulated from it. You know, Joe Biden's never going to have to worry about whether the heat works at the White House or the air conditioning, or whether there's enough food for him and his to eat. Same with Obama at Martha's Vineyard, where he has a mansion that's, I think, a couple of feet above the sea level that's supposedly going to inundate the entire coastline. Mm-hmm. The arrogance, the insufferability of these people who want to live high on the hog while turning us into serfs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got some kind of massive gas storage thing there that typically, you know, for a gas tank, natural gas tank. I saw that reported a year or two ago that you typically don't see except at an industrial place, you know. But if
I
you
think
look,
it's a couple thousand gallons.
Yeah.
I've got a 200-gallon tank at my house.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, as you point out, he's right there on the coast. And if you look at these sites that say, well, we're going to have global warming and the sea level is going to rise. And, well, if he believed that, his mansion would be underwater. See, he didn't believe any of that. None of these people do.
No.
Yeah, it truly is amazing. We had... comment here, Jason Barker, imagine delivering pizza and an $80,000 EV. I don't think that's going to happen. It'll probably be delivered, I guess, by a drone. And I guess Amazon will have a monopoly on your drone pizza, because that's what they showed us with the World Economic Forum thing, right? You'll have nothing and you'll be happy about it. And we'll give you deliveries to your home, you know, by drone. We'll just drop the pizza.
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's science fiction. I think what's going to happen is something more Soviet, where when you want to eat something, you go down to the government commissariat store, and you stand in line for however long it takes, and maybe by the time you get to the front of the queue, maybe there'll still be a loaf of sawdust bread available for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's part of their 15-minute thing. I found it interesting that every time they talked about how they'd have all the essential stuff within 15 minutes of everybody where they lived, the first thing they mentioned was a pharmacy, because they're going to keep us drugged up.
Yeah. Well, they have to. I mean, there's a reason. You know, in Russia, it was notorious that practically everybody there was drinking vodka all the time. And wouldn't you if you had to live there?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, just come down and get your garbage. And say, you know, this interesting thing, I'll get your comments on this. You know, we talked about all the problems with the drug war and all of the fact that it hasn't worked for 50 years and the fact that it's corrupted our system and created so many prisons and all the rest of this stuff. But, you know, Trump, candidate Trump is out there. There's an article on Reason about candidate Trump wants to now execute drug dealers. He's not very specific about what drugs you're selling, though.
Does that include Borla at Pfizer?
That's what I was going to say. I would let's limit the. He wasn't specific about the drugs, so let's make it about the people that sell his shot. You know, I would support that. But you know, when at the same time, same day, we got a study that comes out. They did a double blind study on opioids, and they found out that it was absolutely useless for people who had neck and lower back pain. And they said, and they did a double-blind study, and it's like, we're just now finding this out? After they've run this stuff for years, after they've addicted all of these people, after we've had all this stuff with Sackler and family and all of Purdue Pharmaceutical, and look at the way, Eric, that they treated Purdue Pharmaceutical and the Sackler family versus the way they treat the Sinaloa drug cartel and El Chapo, right? They didn't come in and confiscate everything that they had before anything starts, you know, with full. They negotiated with them and then found out that they left billions and billions of dollars on the table for that family. It truly is amazing when you look at that kind of a double standard that they could go all this time with all these people that got addicted to opioids and just now admit that it doesn't do anything except get people addicted.
Well, it's understandable because these big pharma cartels have got the resources to essentially buy the government and buy the regulatory apparatus, which permits them to do what they do. I think the figure is something like 100,000 people die each year as a result of prescription opioids that are given to them. And the first recourse these days of a doctor, when you come in there and say, oh, you know, my back hurts, here's a pill, here's a script. You know, instead of looking to see what the physical problem is and what can be done to correct it so that the person doesn't have to take drugs for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I remember back in 2016 when Chris Christie was running for president, and he said, I support really tough restrictions on drug use. He said, and he gave the story of a friend of his from law school who had a very successful practice and everything. He was jogging, and he injured his back. They put him on opioids, and he got addicted to it, and he lost everything, his practice. He lost all of his money, went bankrupt, his family, his wife divorced him, he lost his family, and he committed suicide. And Chris Christie then pivots and says, so that's why we got to keep marijuana illegal. It's like, a minute. How is that a sequitur, you know, to go from that? When you look at what, you got the Sinaloa drug cartel out there now, or I don't know if it's the Sinaloa drug cartel, but it's one of the drug cartels. Is saying, we are going to execute anybody that sells fentanyl. And I thought, wow, that, you know, what if we did that here in America, you know, with the Pfizer stuff and all the rest of the stuff? They do a better job of policing dangerous drugs, the drug cartels do, than the FDA does in our country, right? They're, this stuff is killing people, and we don't want you to do that because, you know, it's going to bring the wrath of the government down on us. So if you sell this fentanyl, we're going to execute you. I mean...
Well, here's an interesting thing. You know, it's not legal for El Chapo or any of these cartels to advertise on CNN.
That's right. He should have thought of that. You know, he could have owned those places.
People don't know, and this is key. They should know this. So I think it's important to talk about it, that the law was changed back in the 90s, where previously it was not legal for pharmaceutical cartels to advertise on public media, to put commercials on CNN, et cetera, and so on. That changed. They were allowed to. So enormous money thereby was allowed to be used to control the media, because after all, the media is dependent on advertising. The pharmaceutical companies were paying for the ads, and that's why brought to you by Pfizer.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why we had this concerted juggernaut of fear porn propaganda during the pandemic. It's because the pharmaceutical cartels paid for it.
That's right. They absolutely own the media. And I've told the story before. We lived in an area where we didn't have, in 1996, we moved in an area where we didn't have any TV really. And we didn't really want it. We had video stores. If we want to watch something, watch a movie. But we took a vacation after a couple of years. We weren't taking vacations every year. And after a couple of years, we took a vacation and we stayed in a motel. And it's like, what's this on TV? It's like everything is a drug commercial. And it was kind of funny because, you know, they're rambling off as fast as they can talk all the different adverse effects. And there's slow motion pictures of people running through a field while they're rattling off all these horrible things that drug's going to do.
They're normalizing pill popping in the first place. And they're trying to persuade people that for whatever problem you've got in your life, including completely normal problems, like you're a little down because something's not going right in your life right now. Well, instead of, you know, kind of soldiering through it, dealing with it, figuring out what's wrong and correcting it, here's a pill for you so you don't have to think about it too much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you, when we talked about the cash for clunkers, that really got everybody activated on this. Mm-hmm. Jason Parker says Biden ought to give up his old Corvette. My son said, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, how about giving up the beast? You know, that armored limo carry him around in?
Oh,
well, how many miles per gallon does that thing get again?
That's right. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, how many gallons? Yeah, how many gallons per mile? More like it, I guess. My son said, yeah, this Corvette's old and probably not up to today's emission standards. I think you could say that about Biden as well.
Correct.
Superface.
Doesn't it speak to the contemptibleness of people like him? You know, he personally has a cool old car, but he wants to make sure that people like you and I can't have cars like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the elitism, isn't it? And that's, you know, that is what's behind all of this stuff. They're going to have their private jets. I just talked about the fact that yesterday, the man formerly known as Prince, Harry, you know, and Meghan go to a climate conference, and then they take a private jet to a place that private island that everybody says, this is where billionaires go to escape the millionaires. It's so elitist.
Right.
You know, and you see
they've
that
got no self-consciousness at all. Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. They just somehow don't see other people and think, oh, you know, don't we all live this way? What's the big inconvenience?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of people, bemoaning the fact that you had a lot of classic cars taken out, or even things that, you know, some people on there were saying, maybe that's a piece of junk. And as Superface says, well, who's to say what's a piece of junk? That's everybody's determination to make. And that's where we get back to all this. Why should we have the government dictate this to us? And again, the bottom agenda is that bottom line agenda, all of this is, if you see the big picture of where they want to go with the smart cities and the rest of the stuff, it is all about our control and our enslavement. And there's nothing else that's really involved in it.
Yep.
Well, it's always great to talk to you, Eric. And again,
likewise, David.
People will find you at epautos.com or ericpetersautos.com. And we've got just about 2 minutes. I want to ask you one question. I saw that, and it's good, you know, if people are in the market for a radar detector, I see that you have a sponsor there. And, you know, that radar, the Valentine 1 is a great radar detector. I guess it's a Valentine 2 now, the second. I've got the first generation.
The new one's even better.
Yeah,
they've made it more sensitive, so it filters out the noise that you don't want to cause an alert. It's a wonderful piece of equipment, and these days, I recommend not leaving home without one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every once in a while I forget because I go from car to car. And I'm you know, a couple miles down the road when I realize I left it in the other car, and I, oh my God. And the drive is such a chore then, because you have to watch the speedometer, look for cops.
Yep.
It takes all the joy out of driving.
Oh yeah. 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 So if anybody's in the market for something like that, I don't ever see you do any reviews of that, or even of, dash cams. What do you think about dash cams? You don't have any dash cams?
I need to learn more about them. And this is an area of weakness for me. I'm not that hip and with it, as Dr. Evil used to say. I've got this device. I don't even know what its name is, but I use it to take my videos, and people who've watched them will know the quality of them isn't exactly top shelf. But I've heard the GoPro is really good, and it's neat because you can, I guess, suction cup and mount it to all kinds of things, motorcycles, ATVs, whatever you want. Your dog, put it around your dog's neck, and you can take a video of what he's up to.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of really neat technology out of there, and I really ought to bone up on it and learn more about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those have gotten very, very good. They automatically correct any movement and all the rest of that stuff. But, yeah, I look at the radar detectors as a defense against ambushes by police, and then I look at the dash cam as a defense against ambush by bad drivers.
Yeah, well, if you get into an incident, like a wreck, mm-hmm. and it's absolutely the other guy's fault, you have objective proof of that, should it become necessary to litigate it. So that's
right.
No small thing. And
that's
as far as the radar detector, people, they'll look at it and see, okay, it costs $400, but how much does a ticket cost? Just one ticket,
that's
plus
right.
what the insurance mafia is going to hit you for. I can tell you, and I'm not pitching products here, but the thing has saved me probably thousands of dollars over the years in trumped up traffic tickets and insurance premium adjustments.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree. Yeah, we went a little over time because I wanted to let people hear about that. I think that's a very important thing for people on the road. Always great talking to you, Eric, and thank you to the audience. Thank you for your support, and thank you for joining us today and letting us be a part of your day. Thank you very much. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, David.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.